Well, I'd like to greet our watching audience today. I have with me a noted Hebrew scholar, Yair Davidi. Yair, it's very nice to meet you.
Very nice.
And Yair Davidi, did I pronounce your name right?
Close enough.
Yes, is a fellow Australian and a Jewish scholar here in Jerusalem. And he has written a number of books over the years on the subject of the lost 10 tribes of Israel. He has traced what happened to the tribes after the Assyrian captivity and has come to some interesting conclusions based upon his research. And I'm just going to let him share a little bit as to how you all started with this year, what you came to Jerusalem or to Israel back in the 70s, I gather?
In 1974, I first came to Israel.
Mm-hmm. And did you come to Israel before you came in 1974?
Or? No, I came straight. I'd never been to Israel beforehand.
I see.
I came in 1974 to Israel, and I went to an Ulpan. And after that, I studied in Yeshivot, different rabbinical institutions of higher learning.
Yes.
Over the years, and kept coming across Jewish sources that seemed to indicate that the Lost Ten Tribes were to be found in Western regions of the earth, in Western Europe.
Yes.
And related areas.
Yes.
And I'd been familiar with this idea beforehand in Australia.
Oh, before you came to Israel, you had some information on that.
In my youth, I'd come run across different writers.
Yes.
Who or different literature from different various sources.
Mm-hmm.
That mentioned this idea. Also, my father was interested in it. My grandmother was interested in it. But I'd more or less put it aside.
Yes.
I became more interested, you could say, since technically I was born Jewish, I was more interested in deepening my awareness, my commitment and knowledge of Judaism.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd more or less dismissed this idea, or not so much dismissed it, but pushed it to one side as being irrelevant and unproven, but I kept coming across these sources that indicated there was something in it.
I see.
And this, and together with an ongoing interest in contemporary affairs and history, which seemed to tie in, with aspects of which seemed to tie in with what these sources said, led me to the, aroused the drive within me to try and to study the subject deeply, or at least sufficiently for my own purposes, to convince myself whether it was true or not true, one way or the other.
Yes.
Which I did, and I spent quite a long time studying it. Eventually I came to the conclusion that there was something in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept on studying it, and how one thing led to another. Eventually I put out one book. A rabbi lent me the money to first print the tribes, the first edition of the tribes.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, by the time the tribes was printed, I already had enough material for other books and research notes, and I kept on researching and corresponding with people and deepening my knowledge of this subject. So consequently, these books were the result, and other books as well, some of which are out of print at the moment, and still for more notes.
I see.
And articles and information in general relating to this subject.
I see. So this was your first book here, was it? This is called The Tribes. And this is your assessment of where the Lost Ten Tribes went, and the general consensus is that they went westwards from south of the Caucasus Mountains and generally drifted westwards over the centuries. Did they move basically along the Mediterranean Sea initially with the Roman Empire? Because we see the Roman Empire basically clustered around the Mediterranean Sea. Did they go along the coast initially, or did they go overland through the steppes of Russia? Or
Yes and no. We find that the Assyrians conquered the people, the tribes of Israel, which were quite numerous and spread over quite a good portion of the Middle East at that time, at the time of their conquest. And they exiled the Israelites in stages, and through various routes. In the Book of Amos, it speaks about an exile by ships, but that the Phoenicians and the people of Tyre, it says the people of Tyre and of Azza, in other words, of Ashdod, the Philistines, Amos condemns them for helping exile the Israelites, the northern Israelites. And we also find a reference to in Amos again of Israelites being taken away in ships. This is repeated in Isaiah.
Oh, in Amos. Amos mentions that they were taken away in ships.
Yes. He mentions the portion of them. Amos says that a portion of them will be taken away by ships, and another portion will be taken to what is now the general region of the Caucasus Mountains.
Yes. Yes.
He mentions those two areas. Elsewhere, Amos mentions the Philistines and the Phoenicians. He condemns them for helping in deporting the Israelites. Isaiah, in several passages, mentions the Israelites being exiled by sea.
Yes.
Yes. He also mentions a movement of Phoenicians from the region of Lebanon to Spain.
Okay, so
I'm confusing you. I'll keep it very simple.
Yes.
Combining different biblical verses together with archaeological findings, we come to the conclusion that a portion, not necessarily the major portion.
Steve, welcome. Come and sit over here. And this is a rather rugged sort of an interview with Mr. Yair Davidi, and he has just started to talk to us about the studies he's made related to the expansion or the expulsion of the tribes out of Israel, and then their subsequent scatterings. Apparently, the main movement was to the west. Yeah,
the movement was to the west.
Okay,
but it wasn't a mass movement. The Israelites were very numerous, quite numerous at that time, even by our standards. Mm-hmm. They spread all over the Middle East. Mm-hmm. The Assyrians, in stages, took all of these people and they took them elsewhere to different regions in their empire.
Mm-hmm.
In the geographical sense, they a portion of them. They also conquered, as well as conquering. So what was then Israel, the state of Israel, the state of Israel, also conquered the regions of what is Phoenicia, Tyre, Sidon, the Phoenician states on the Lebanese coast, and the Philistine cities of Gaza, Ashdod, Ashkelon in the southeast.
I see.
And these people, actually the Philistines were part of what is known in archaeological terms as Minoan.
The
civilization.
Sea peoples, perhaps?
That's also connected. Mm-hmm. The sea peoples with the Minoan civilization based on Crete, but also connected with Cyprus. That was the Phoenicians were part of that, and the Syrians used Philistines and Phoenician ships and Phoenicians to transport, put less Israelites in their ships and take them to the west. And where they took them to the west, we don't know every place they took them to the west, where all the places were that were taken to the west were. We do know, definitely do know, that a good portion of them were taken to southeast Spain.
Yes, yes. So they made their way to Europe, basically, along the sea coast of the Med, along the northern sea coast.
I'll give you an overall headings. Mm-hmm. Then they took them to Spain. From Spain later on, they moved to the north. Into the British Isles. The Syrians may also have taken, among these Phoenicians and Philistines, may already have taken some of them to the British Isles before then, and into what is now France. Mm-hmm. Another portion of the Israelites were taken by the Assyrians into the Syrian Empire.
Mm-hmm.
Different portions of the Syrian Empire, both on the border areas and in the major cities themselves. Within the Syrian Empire, there were different changes, political changes, there was revolutions, attacks by enemies and so on, the Israelites were became very prominent in the Israelite army. There were whole regiments of Israelite cavalrymen.
Which army is this?
The Assyrian army.
Oh, the Assyrian army, yes.
They conscripted the Israelite exiles into the Assyrian army. Mm-hmm. Whole regiments of chariots, mm-hmm. of archers, and other forces, auxiliary forces were made out of Israelites, or partially a good portion of them were of Israelites. You find Israelite names amongst the major generals in the Assyrian army. At all events, there were revolutions, there were changes, there were new different peoples were coming in. Mm-hmm. The Israelites became identified with one of the peoples who had also been under Assyrian control, the Sumerians and the Scythians, and they became identified with them. And after wars and revolutions, they were pushed out of the Middle East, north of the Caucasus, where they remained for several hundred. Where in stages they moved westward.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them moved westward almost straight away. Some of them remained in that area for hundreds of years, and only after that followed the tracks. Eventually, in summary though, all of the Israelites, each different migratory path of migration, all of them eventually converge into Western Europe.
Mm-hmm. And they did go up north of the Caucasus into the steppes of Russia for a period. Are they related to the Khazars in some way at certain
point? Yes, we believe that the Khazars were definitely a portion of the Israelites who would remain behind. Most all their brethren had gone westward. A portion of them did remain behind, and they became the kingdom of the Khazars, who converted to Judaism, and some of whom became assimilated amongst the Jewish people.
I see. Yes, so some of them made their way back, came into Judah.
Yes.
I see. I'm going to stop right now, just to make sure that we've got our recording running okay. This is wonderful. Thank you very much.
You're recording nicely here, I think,
Over at Wind Park and Migration.
Yes.
In all my books is maps.
Yes. In fact, I'd like to get with you. Do you have a place where we could come and visit and see all your maps?
We have an office.
An office?
In Rehavia, which is near the centre of town.
Mm-hmm.
And you're welcome to come there and see how we work and where we work from.
Mm-hmm.
But as for maps and so on, we have maps.
The maps are mainly, you have most of your maps in your books, indeed?
Most of the maps are already in the books.
Okay.
There's some additional material which you could show you.
Yes.
And if you'd like to see our office anyway, where we work from and what we do.
Yes, I'd love to come down and see your office. You sell your books and do your research, and your associate Shmuel James,
Mr. Shmuel James
is with you.
And historical researcher.
I see. And
expert in mythology, languages.
Mythology, okay. So you can trace some of the passages of... Shmuel, do you want to come and sit over here, because we can't see you right this minute. And bring a chair around. Yeah, that'd be great. This is Mr. Shmuel, what was your last name?
James.
James, okay. Come a little closer so our mics can pick you up here. So you have done some research in the area of mythology and what the cultural connections.
Yeah, but Shmuel is not so interested in Austrian tribes per se.
Mm-hmm.
He's more interested in finding links between
I'll hold it here.
Between biblical sources and the traditions of humanity in general.
Okay, so we're talking traditions and then the biblical record at the same time.
Yes, Shmuel is not so much interested in the physical whereabouts of the Lost Ten Tribes.
Mm-hmm.
He's more interested in finding the common roots of humanity's beliefs of mythology of foreign nations.
Yes.
And comparing them to biblical and rabbinical sources.
Okay, so would you have done any research on the Chinese language? And how they have done, they've got elements of understanding of the flood and peace, for example, is a man and a woman in a garden in Chinese. Some of these elements?
How about the Japanese with elements of the Lost Ten, the Lost Tribes, or Israel?
Spoke about the flood. Yeah, so the flood. The flood. You find it everywhere.
Yeah, they all have.
And it's very important in China.
Yes.
Yahoo, a man who was saved, you know, like Noah.
Yes.
Yahoo, and in Japan, that is something everywhere you find.
Yes, yes.
In Australia, American Indians, yes, Europeans, Acadians, you know, Mesopotamia, it's everywhere.
But now...
Yes,
okay, we've got some interesting arrivals and comings and goings here.
And it's
a nice free-flowing sort of
meeting. And beyond the flood.
All right, do you want to come and join our little conversation here? Just for a minute or two?
Okay.
We've got a rather narrow angle of view here, but would you like to introduce yourself and say how you've met Yair in the past?
Yeah, okay. My name is Jackie Pilcher, and I met Yair in about 4 years ago. And we bring groups over for Exodus Limited, and we bring groups over, and we brought them to bring the Christian and the Jew together. And Yair came and spoke to us a couple of times. So anyway, he
on
came.
These themes of the lost tribes.
Yes, and, the tribes and his history, and
the eventual
reuniting.
Reuniting
of the groups.
What happened?
In
the breach in Jeroboam in 900 and something BC. And,
right. Yeah. And the division of the the division is very unique too, because it gives you a great perspective and understanding of the scriptures. Because when the tribes, northern tribes, went out in about 700 BC, then through Assyria, they were, with all the research that you did, it was wonderful, because everyone kind of confuses the Babylonian with the first dispersion, and they forget. And so when you study the scriptures, you see that, no, that went first, and then the Babylonian and went out. So it just, his books are marvelous, and we really love him, and it's good to, so good to see you in Jerusalem again.
So. Go ahead. Speak on. I'm going
to
just.
I don't know what to say except, how was your son? I have a picture of you and your son in the army.
Oh, he's very good. He's
married. Is he good now? Oh.
Five children.
Oh my gosh! Wonderful. That is wonderful.
And he's learning to be a rabbi.
Oh, wonderful! That is great. Very good. Very good. So we miss you. I hope we can. I'm so happy to see you. I asked some people the other day, had they seen you? Were you here? And so, see, I get to, Hashem says, I get to see you. I get to visit with you, so that's wonderful. And I hope people will read your books and have a good understanding. Is this a new one?
Yes,
do you have the new book?
New,
that's your new one. I recognize one, this. I'll have to take a look. I look at that one, because I have a lot of your books that I've read. So, and they're very, this wonderful history, wonderful detail, wonderful research. So you spent, I know, many years researching and pulling this out for us. So we do appreciate that very much.
This is Shmuel James. Shmuel wasn't here then. He's a friend of ours.
How do you do? Nice to meet you.
He's researching
nice
his own writings.
Oh, you do? A lot of research, too?
Yeah, but more in the linguistics, mythology, not so much in the Ten Tribes.
But still, you know, a lot of research is good. Yeah. You know, we're supposed to study. We're supposed to dig this stuff out. Yeah. We look to the scholars to help us, you know, with this. So much appreciated with that.
So you just happened to run into Yair after all these years.
Yeah, I recognize this. Oh, Yair, because I asked. There were some people that I had asked that part of the group. And I was, you know, have you seen Yair? Has he been here? So, because I know he comes around all the good things.
So you've been around these parts before with these people here. You know that they exist, that there are people who are very interested in these things. And,
yes.
And that there's some scholarship in Christian circles, but it's rather rough and ready. And a lot of people are not interested. There's only a very, very small interest by just a few people. But the people that are interested are very interested.
They're very interested and very interesting.
Hmm.
And very nice. It's always a great pleasure to meet people. It's invigorating. It's invigorating when people, other people, sense interest or interested in it.
Yes.
We appreciate what's been done, what we're doing.
Yes, well, this is a good research, and also it draws us into the scriptures again, which is always helpful to realize that the God of Abraham is Isaac and Jacob are still doing business and still unfolding mysteries, so it's a real pleasure to be able to have you here. Would you like to share a little bit about the other books that you have here? Yeah,
yes.
you've got the tribes, which is your first one.
Maybe you'd like.
Yes. Yeah. Let me come over and I'll get the camera.
This stick. This was made by Tom Turner of Idaho, VDOT Productions. It's a work of art. Was sent to us by Tom Turner. Represents the stick of Ezekiel. In Ezekiel 37, the prophet Ezekiel is commanded by the Almighty to take the stick of Judah and in one hand, and the stick of Joseph. For Joseph, the stick of Ephraim and all of Israel and all the house of Israel is the companions in the other hand. And you will take one stick and put one stick upon take the two and you shall place one stick upon the other stick, and they shall be one stick in your hand.
Wow.
And they become one stick.
Yes.
And this represents the eventual reunion of Judah and Joseph, of Judah and the lost ten tribes in the last days. And Ezekiel speaks of this most emphatically, and so do all the other prophets. And this is how Tom Turner gives us his understanding of how the stick could be, and it's very nice. It's a work of art, and if anyone's interested, they can always get through my website. They can have a look at other sticks which Tom Turner has made and get in touch with Tom himself.
Yes, and what is your website?
My website is britam.org.
Britam.org. So it's a very simple website name, and you can have access to your books here, as well as this wonderful one stick.
That's right. A whole bit. Wow. Yes. Is it when you look at this, and you can, and a lot of people look at that scripture, that whole passage, and they read about the dry bones and they stop. And when you go on further, you see this, you know, what does this mean? Because it says it's a mystery. And then when you see today, when you see all the movement that is happening across the world, it's really moving across the world. People are coming to a realization. And more that times that I come to Israel, when we met in 2003, the groups in 2003 and 4, more and more people are grasping and understanding. And it's just a natural movement. You know,
instinctual arousal.
Yes, it's just coming from the heart. People are coming together, and you hear it more and more. You hear it in Israel, and you hear it in the U.S., we hear it around the world. The people are just coming together very naturally. And I think what is nice is no one's trying to change any other. They're not trying, besides trying not to change this one and this one or this one. It is just the natural coming together and love and understanding, according to Scripture. So it's real exciting, and he's got this great history.
So that's the way things should be.
Yes, it should be. Yes.
A very rough but an approximate map of the tribal distribution of the 12 tribes before they were exiled by the Assyrians.
Okay, that's in the Common Kingdom, or is that before the breach of Jeroboam?
No, this is after the breach of Jeroboam. No, including up from the time they entered the land to they were exiled.
Okay, so they all stayed in their tribal lands, pretty much according to those borders that Joshua set out for them, until they were all exiled.
Yes, that is correct.
Except for Dan, and Dan did a little jump from down here up to the north, didn't
yes.
he?
And there were other movements, but approximately for our purposes, we can take the borders as given here. Mm-hmm. This second map shows us that the, as we explained within the book, the tribes, that the extent of Israelite extension before their exile actually covered a good portion of the Middle East. It included not only what is now known as the present state of Israel, included a portion of Egypt, a portion of Saudi Arabia, mm-hmm. all of Syria, Lebanon, a portion of Turkey. The tribe of Dan ruled over the island of Cyprus.
Mm-hmm.
And they reached up right up to the Euphrates River.
Okay.
Okay. So they went to the Euphrates River, and is this during the captivity of the Assyrians?
No, this is before the captivity of the Assyrians. The Israelites were to be found throughout this region.
Yes.
But there were other peoples mixed in with them.
I see.
They lived amongst other peoples, between other peoples.
I see.
Alongside them.
So they spilled over. They were spilling over the borders even back before the Assyrian captivity.
Exactly.
And we did. I've got a picture of the tribes under David and Solomon, and apparently during the heyday of the British of the Israelite superpower, more or less, under Solomon, they extended up here to the Euphrates River.
Yes.
And down toward Egypt, the river of Egypt, which is north of the Nile.
And our understanding of scripture is that not only in the time of David, but also before David, in the time of Saul, and even for a period in the time of the Judges, the Israelites were to be found within these regions of what we call, for want of a better term, the borders of Greater Israel.
Okay, so they were spilling over the borders.
Okay. Up until the time of the Assyrian exile.
Okay.
We have another map here. We have a map here showing how one portion of the exiles was taken from the land of Israel, taken by the Assyrians and taken up into Assyria and also into Media, where it went amongst the places into which Israelite exiles were taken. As mentioned, the cities of the Medes.
Yes.
So that is in the area of northern Iran, and also present-day Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
That was where they were taken. We have another map here.
This map here, yeah. This map here. That.
This map shows the Assyrian portions of the Assyrian Empire as it then was. And the purpose of this map is more or less to show us, to give us an idea of different events which are described in the book, where they were.
Yeah, so here's Assyria here.
Yes.
And the tribes went up basically to Syria, and the Caucasus Mountains are very...
Up here. They're not that far away. So they're not that far away. Just
and they're a real border. They are a real solid border for migration on the Caucasus Mountain. And then there's the Black Sea, so the question is, could they have gone east, or...
Right, so we have another map over here, which shows...
Oh, okay, here's a good
which
one.
Shows some of the paths of migration.
Okay.
I emphasize some of them, not all of them.
Yes, yes.
I also emphasize that the Israelites split up. They were split up by force, and also by the force of circumstances, they split up into different groups.
Mm-hmm.
And these different groups had histories of their own, and developments of their own.
Yes.
Sometimes they returned and rejoined each other, intermixed with each other, or split off apart from each other.
Mm-hmm.
And different events happened to one. What happened to one group did not necessarily happen to the other. But over the course of centuries, they all moved to the west. Some of them went west at a very reasonably early date, not long after having been exiled by the Assyrians. And some of them several centuries afterwards,
mm-hmm.
up until even 1,000 years afterwards.
Yes.
But over this period of time, this long period of time, as far as history is concerned, all of them went in the general direction of the west. And mm-hmm. this a map shows some of the paths of migration.
Okay.
Since we have some of them, especially the Sumerians, they went what is now northern Turkey for a period, and then they went westward, crossed over the Bosphorus Straits into mm-hmm. southeast Europe, and continued on upwards into central Europe. Where some of them continued into Scandinavia and others westward into France and over the sea into the British Isles.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas others moved further north up here to the Caucasus areas, also including part of the Sumerians again. Now they did push on the Sumerians and the people become known as the Scythians. In Scythia, in this area of Eurasia,
yeah, the steppes of Russia is up here.
It's
grasslands up here, right?
Yes.
Europe is pretty much forest, though, isn't it? I mean, at this period in time, and it's sort of a forested area, and it was hard to settle this forested area initially. The steppes of Russia might have been easy earlier on, but then...
You see this line here? That approximately gives us an idea where the steppes were, mm-hmm. very approximate.
I see.
And
that was a route at the steppe along the northern route north of the Black Sea is one route to the west,
yes.
And then the other route would be across the Bosphorus. Now that seems to be a big geographical barrier there, is it? Or is
no,
it
no, actually, it's a very it's an easily crossed waterway.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of people cross that both in both directions.
So they cross that
in
boats?
It's quite frequent for people to come from Europe and invade what is now Turkey, Anatolia, as it was known in that age. That time it was also well known for people from Anatolia to move into Southeast Europe. Not only Israelites, but all types of peoples.
Okay, so
it's a well-known route. Historical route of migrating peoples.
Migrating
populations.
Okay, so the time of the Romans, where were the tribes at that time? Were they pretty much moving to the west
About the time of the Romans, a good portion of the Israelites, or the descendants of the Israelite exiles, were where we find them today. There were exceptions.
They'd made their way into Europe by that time, have they?
They were already in Ireland, they were already in Britain.
They'd already crossed the English Channel.
The ancestors of most of those who are today in Britain had already reached there. The Anglo-Saxons were still in Germany, but they shortly afterwards would also move into England. There were also the Vikings who also came to the British Isles were still in Scandinavia. There were also people known as the Nephthalites at that time were in Central Asia. They moved into Scandinavia and supplemented completed the population of the Scandinavian region. As we said before, it was those who remained behind in north of the Caucasus area and to the east of it, around the Caspian Sea, who became the Khuzars.
I see. Now, is there any evidence that some of the tribal elements went to the east? There's been some talk about some evidence of the Japanese customs, like the samurai, Samaritan. There's one example that people give. There's Mount Moriah. There are some cultural things, religious things related to Shintoism that the frontlets of scriptures on the forehead, for example, are in. Have you heard anything about that?
Yes, on my website I have an article on the subject discussing the evidence. The article, the heading of the article is the Japanese not Israelites.
Mm-hmm.
We give alternate explanations for this phenomenon,
as you
mentioned.
Yes.
There may have been another people, Moabites or Edomites, who had also observed Israelite customs, reached that area.
Mm-hmm.
But we do not dismiss altogether the possibility that Israelites were there and Israelites did come there. We just bring up from historical sources alternatives which make correspond more with the evidence as we understand.
I see.
And we have criteria by which we judge if one wants who belongs to the tribes of Israel and who does not.
Is that right?
Yes, we use different several points of criteria.
Mm-hmm.
And these criteria include, first of all, there has to be biblical indications that the lost ten tribes would end up in the last days, would be within the region.
Mm-hmm.
In addition, we need historical evidence. The groups who we can at least tentatively identify as belonging to the Lost Ten Tribes did pass through that region, those regions.
Mm-hmm.
And we also look for certain characteristics, certain personality, national personality traits, which we consider to be consistent with Israelite ancestry.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Like the way people nod, for example, you go east to the...
No, we wouldn't say that. We would say more or less how people respect each other, how people have respect a tradition of respecting each other, respecting other people, of believing, of respecting the Jewish population who lived amongst them or who they come in contact with.
Mm-hmm.
A certain combination of traditions and how the great men amongst them have expressed themselves historically, and how they as a national body seem to express themselves and to what degree they identify with biblical values. whether this is through the intermediary of Christianity, it doesn't really matter for us.
Mm-hmm.
The bottom line is how they identify with biblical values and how they express them.
I see. Now, just a brief question about the Edomites here. The Edomites presumably were scattered, and according to Genesis, they were went into the fat places of the earth, and the blessing that was given to Esau by his father Jacob, Isaac. Any thoughts about that?
Esau was blessed that he should by your sword you shall live, and you were blessed with the fruitful places of the earth.
Yes, suggesting that Esau may well have found some good places to live, just like Jacob did.
Yes, and you will struggle with your brother.
Yeah.
And when he becomes the head, you will become the tail, and vice versa.
Suggesting that at the end of the age, Esau, instead of being under the yoke of the civil Jacob's restrictive presence, will turn the tables and the wild one will tend to come out. That would seem to be happening in the West to some degree today.
Right, you can proceed. Yeah, what you're on.
As we have said, we believe that Lost and Jobs went to the West. We believe that because the Bible says they did. And also rabbinical sources confirm interpretation of the Bible as saying that the Lost and Tribes did go in that direction, did go to Western Europe, and from there their descendants have populated Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, and North America. And our understanding of these sources, of these biblical and rabbinical sources, has been confirmed by so-called secular sciences and historical studies that show that the peoples who were exiled by the Assyrians from the land of Israel were split up, did diverge in the different directions, and later converged, reconverged, came together once again over a period of centuries, of many, very, very, very many centuries in some cases, and that eventually, in some way or other, through different causes, in each case it's a different case, each case has its own unique explanations, but the bottom line is they did all converge on the West, did all head in a westerly direction, and that is where we find them, and that is where the Bible said they would be found in the latter days.
Okay, so, let me ask you this then. Remember I emailed you yesterday and I talked about paper chromatography, about how pigments can be separated out and then they can gather again, they tend to move together and coalesce together. Is that something about what happened to the tribes? They tended to group together according to their spiritual characteristic that was stamped on them back when the God of Abraham, Isaac and Jacob made covenant.
There is an exact description of our understanding of what did happen, and what Scripture and other sources said would happen.
Yes. Now, regarding the blessings that were given to the 12 tribes by Jacob, are there clues there that give us some personal characteristics or some historical destinies in the last, Jacob said were in the latter days, that we can lay hold of today to try to determine where those clumpings may have occurred in Europe?
Definitely. Both the blessings that Jacob gave to his sons and at the end of Genesis, and also the similar blessings that Moses gave to the whole tribes before, at the end of the book of Deuteronomy, which if you look closely, these blessings are similar to each other and supplement each other.
Mm-hmm.
If you take these blessings and compare them with other sources, we get a lot of information, a lot of indications as to where the Lost Ten Tribes went to.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, it says that in Hebrew it says concerning Zebulun, Zebulun Chof Yamim Yishkon. Zebulun, literally, as in a literal translation, would dwell on the shores of the sea. Mm-hmm. And we identified Zebulon as having gone to Holland, to the Netherlands.
Yes. My particular interest was to determine spiritually the spiritual character of these tribes, and then to try to match up the spiritual character of the patriarchs with European nations. And it's amazing how we can come to the same conclusions, because I came to the exact same conclusion about Zebulun, that he was a tribe and a patriarch, and it said a haven is a place of peace, and a character which desires peace, and at the same time peaceful trade. And the Dutch were, as they came into their modern era, the 1600s particularly, they showed a proclivity for peaceful trade. They didn't even want to put guns on their ships, for the love of Mike. And so they also gathered a lot of peace-loving people from the central Germanic nations during the Reformation Wars in the 1500s, and the peace-loving people said, we're not going to fight anymore, one year for the Catholic army, next year for the Protestant army. And a lot of those peace-loving people made their way through Holland. Of course, a lot of them went on to England and America afterwards, but Holland was the superpower at that time, and this element of peace and planting tulips and even to this day the desire of the Dutch people to have peace, and they don't want to have a fight, that character trait is still with them. And so here it is, you've come to the same conclusion. Isn't that intriguing? Have you got anything more to add about Zebulun?
We find in Ptolemy. Ptolemy was a Greek geographer, or a geographer who lived in Egypt of Greek origin, mm-hmm. Greek ancestry. No, he wasn't Christian. He wasn't Jewish. He based himself upon Phoenician records, and he records the presence in the region of Holland, of northern Holland, of a people known as Zebulun Goy.
Oh, so the name was there.
Zebulun Goy in Hebrew Goy means a people, and Zebulun is another word, means Zebulun. In other words, the people of Zebulun.
So there's linguistic evidence.
Yes, there's a different, like, we can go into great detail. There's a lot of evidence. This is the most blatant, the most this is a straightforward one-on-one correlation.
Yes,
which doesn't need any further explanations.
Yes,
that's why I'm giving it. Another thing is that it was, as we said, that it was said that Zebulun would dwell on the shores of the sea.
Mm-hmm.
One third of Holland is under sea level.
Yes, yes.
Another third needs protection from periodic flooding.
Mm-hmm.
You could say, literally speaking, two thirds of the Netherlands is on the shores of the sea.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the only people in the world to which this description applies.
Yes, yes. That is fascinating. We've got a little bit more time on this tape. Is there another? I'm leaving out the English speaking people, just concentrating on the central, the European peoples here. You've mentioned Zebulun with the Dutch. Could you mention any other connections with any other European countries that looked like they may be connected to a particular member of the Lost Ten Tribes?
We have Denmark. Denmark. Yeah. Denmark means the mark of Dan, the Dan. Border of Dan.
Yes.
We also have the peoples of Joseph, belonging to Joseph, who settled in the British Isles.
Yes.
The Perisi, the Iran. We have various names, the Caledoni. We have various names of different tribes who settled in Britain, mm-hmm. which are similar to those belong to clans of both Ephraim and Manasseh, of the tribes of Joseph.
Oh, okay. So these are little clans within Ephraim and Manasseh that have got linguistic connections to Europe, to British Isle, Caledonian. What about the Celtic? Is there anything in the Celtic? What does it mean? What does Celts mean? That's one thing that I have not been able to get a good handle on.
Just a second.
Yeah.
Oh. Abraham Shekel, we saw. Abraham Shekel,
sure. We'll take. We can take a break if you like, sweetie.
Okay.
And, okay, we're on again. And we're talking about some of the European nations and their connections to the lost tribes. We talked about Zebulun and the Dutch, the Holland,
the British,
and the British and Americans, Manasseh and Ephraim.
And then we can talk about the French being Reuben.
Oh, okay. Now, we've all seen the character of Reuben when we read the scripture. We know that Reuben went up to his father's couch, had sexual relations with one of the concubines of his father. So he was pretty sternly rebuked for his proclivities towards that side of things. But at the same time, with Reuben, he is the firstborn, right? So in it, and his name means "Behold, a son." And in other words, there's a sense of grandeur, and it's mentioned that in the scriptures, the excellency of dignity, and the sense of what is the right thing to do. There's a sense of him being the eldest, and
good
him
quality, good quality.
Yes. For example, we wouldn't eat with a knife and fork if it wasn't for the French. They set the standards in the French court. There's a sense of grandeur also in some of their histories. The boy stood on the burning. Do you remember that book, that poem, "The Boy Stood on the Burning Deck"? Maybe by the time you and I went to school, it had already. But during the whole of the 19th century, "The Boy Stood on the Burning Deck" was a classic, and that was about a French boy who, in a sense of duty and grandeur and gallantry, he stood on that deck, and he was. And the whole ship was on fire, and he just stood at his post because that was where he was supposed to be until the ship blew up. And that was a sense of the French with that character of grandeur, of gallantry. And that element is in the French. That's a spiritual connection that I made. And as far as I'm concerned, it's very strong. Is there something else that you can bring from the point of view of linguistics or a knowledge of the archaeology or?
Well, I could say that the French word, name France comes from the Franks.
Yes.
And the primary element amongst those Franks who founded the Kingdom of France, known as Ribuari Franks.
Okay.
And this has been interpreted to mean the Franks from the river banks. It's similar, related to the Latin. The Latin says Ribuari, mm-hmm. meaning riverbank. So they say take Ribuari as a version of Ribuari. But it doesn't necessarily have to be that way, because often the names given to peoples, nation times, were interpreted according to some characteristics that they had in the eyes of the people doing the interpretation.
Yes.
In other words, the Romans, also the Hebrews, but the Romans, the Hebrews, all ancient peoples, when they heard the name given to these peoples, mm-hmm. they would have interpreted in their, according to what the nearest meaning it had in their own language, in their own language of Latin. Mm-hmm. Whereas their name in their own language of these Franks, which was apparently Ribuari.
Mm-hmm.
Ribuari is can be considered similar a version of an Aramaic version of Reuben.
Yes. So there's a connection there.
And there are numerous connections. Also connections with the sons of Reuben.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So they have names as well, and presumably those names got carried on.
Yes.
Yes.
And we have what is interesting, just as you mentioned, the mentioning characteristics and names together. So we have an interesting point here, which is worth looking at, which I mentioned, which I explained in detail in my book, The Tribes. Here's a map of France, and here is national characteristics of Reuben. It says that the son of Reuben, firstborn of Israel, was Hanok and Phallu, and Hezron and Carmi.
Mm-hmm.
So, Reuben had four sons.
Mm-hmm.
And the name of the firstborn was Hanok.
Mm-hmm.
Hanok in Hebrew means did consecrate. Means just kind of courtly behavior and sense of education.
Yes. Yes.
So we have the French Sorbonne, we have the French academics, mm-hmm. French intellect,
mm-hmm.
which is very high.
Yes.
Very logical.
Yes.
Very both stratified and demanding.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the one. The other son, the next son, is called Falul. Falul in Hebrew means excellent.
Okay, there's another connection. Excellency of dignity, related to Reuben, the firstborn.
French cooking, French perfume.
Yes,
wine.
Fashions, for example.
French put emphasis on having the best on something which is distinguished.
And then
Falul means distinguished.
Or panache is another word. Some of these names, these words and descriptions jumped out of the French language and they come into our language, and then we talk about panache or grandeur or.
Next to words you really like, the next name is Hezron, which in Hebrew can mean both courtyard, French courtiers,
mm-hmm.
and peasants. So the French are known for their very strong the peasant element.
Mm-hmm.
The people of small homesteads,
yes.
of agricultural values,
mm-hmm.
that is a very strong element of land, or owning land, and mm-hmm. Dwelling together in small communities.
Mm-hmm.
That is an aspect of the French. The last one, Kami, which means vineyard.
Oh, yeah.
Kami is in Hebrew, means Kerem. In Hebrew, it means vineyard.
Yeah.
So the last son of Reuben is called Vineyard. The French are known, you think of the French, and one of the things which comes to mind is French wines.
Yes.
And then it's the name given to the
fourth. Isn't that something? Isn't that something?
Yeah. And incidentally, these names are also names of different tribes, or similar to names of different tribes,
mm-hmm.
which were prominent in French history, in the early Frenchmen of France, under the Celts and the Franks who came after them.
I see. Now, I've only got a little bit more time here yet. On this tape, I can switch it over, yeah, but the Celts, could you mention something about the Celts? The Celtic music is starting to become popular, and yet I don't have a real firm grasp on the Celts. I know that they tended to move westwards to, they were Central European, I guess, and then they tended to go into the British Isles. Any connections there?
The Celts, or at least a significant element amongst them, were of Israelite origin. We know that linguistic studies of Welsh and Irish do show a so-called Semitico-Hamitic, in other words, something similar to ancient Egyptian, and also similar to ancient Hebrew.
Mm-hmm.
Linguistic substructure does exist in these languages. This is more or less generally accepted nowadays, mm-hmm. by many linguists.
There's
a whole school of thought which accepts this linguistic definition. Doesn't mean that they're saying that they're from the Lost End tribes, but it does bring it the reality of it, of this concept, closer.
Yes.
It makes it more feasible, more easy to grasp.
Yes.
Hold on. When we see that also academic disciplines themselves, mm-hmm. in their own way, draw close to conclusions that we have reached.
I see.
From the Bible and elsewhere, we also know that the ancient, the Druids, and their customs,
mm-hmm.
of human sacrifice, of the mistletoe, mm-hmm. of holy oaks, of dances.
Oh, the holy oaks and dances. Okay, Celtic music, talking about the ribbon around the oak tree. Israel getting up to mischief on the high places. Does that ring a bell with you?
Yes, no, so we have dolmens and metalithic, so-called metalithic monuments, the Khans, mm. and so on.
Mm.
And all of these, when you analyze them and go into them, and know what the Celtic traditions about them were. For instance, the chief god of the Celts was known as Bel.
Oh, Bel.
Which was a Middle East pronunciation of what the Bible term is Baal.
Yes, yeah. So it goes back to the misbehavior of the lost of Israel before they were scattered with Baal worship.
Yes, and exactly. They were exiled before worshipping Baal, before worshipping Ashtoreth, before going the ways of the Canaanites around them.
Yes.
And when they went into exile, that was why they were exiled, and when they went into exile, they apparently didn't change for the better, or not all of them did.
Yes. Still they just carried their pagan characteristics with them as they drifted west.
Exactly.
A bit like Goma drifting in her pagan ways, making connections with foreign princes in Europe, and forgetting the God of Abraham, Isaac, and
exactly.
Jacob.
Exactly. As indicated in the book of Hosea.
Yes.
Chapters 1 and 2.
Yeah, that's right. So Hosea's prophecy was a pretty good, clear indication of the Celtic flow as they went west, and still in their paganism. Yeah. Great. Yeah, I'm going to just stop it now, and since we're running out of film, thank you so much for this section. We're going to come back and resume this on the next sector. Man, that was wonderful. Yeah. Man, this guy's good.
He has a lot of knowledge.
You hang out with people like Shmuel and a little bit rubs off, you know what I mean?